In the news.
Welcome to In the News for American and Texas Government. I'm Eric McDaniel.
And I'm Jim Henson.
Well, we're back for another week, and again, we're going to start off with the thing that's the big buzz, and that's the primaries. So if you look at right now at the delegate count, it's clear that Donald J. Trump is in the lead. However, Ted Cruz is catching up to him, as Ted Cruz has won several primaries and caucuses. And the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton has the lead, but again, Bernie Sanders is catching up to her by winning several primaries and several caucuses. Now, what's important to note is that these are in smaller states. So while they keep talking about the, you know, winning like four in a row, well, you're winning four small states in a row. I think Trump won American Samoa, which really isn't in a lot of delegates. So it's problematic the way they talk about the number of states won, because the states are weighted differently. And so it's important to note that in the bigger states, that Trump and Clinton are doing better. However, that Wisconsin loss is kind of one of the big states that Trump did lose. But the next big thing on the agenda is New York.
New York. We're not going to sing, though.
No.
The next big primary is in New York. It's a significant delegate haul. And New York is very distinctive for having very hardball politics. And there's this history of people going to New York and essentially pandering for delegates.
Yes.
And so we've seen a lot of that in the last couple of weeks. On the Republican side, if you look at the polling, Donald Trump way ahead. It's his, you know, basically home turf for Donald Trump. And, you know, if we go back, one of the very early podcasts we did or newscasts we did, we were talking about Ted Cruz kind of ragging on New Yorkers about New York values. It was a play for cultural conservatives. Like, we talked about it as kind of the anti-urban, anti-cosmopolitan vote in the Republican Party. But right now, Ted Cruz is in chickens coming home to roost mode.
Yeah, so he went to the Bronx where he met with some leaders in the area. I think he actually went and made some challah or something like that. I forget what he did. Maybe made some matzah. So he went out. He did the whole thing. I think he ate a Reuben, drank some Snapple. You know, the things New Yorkers normally do. But there is one instance in the Bronx where people actually shouted him, tried to shout him down in a restaurant in the Bronx. So it was clear that, you know, this New York values thing didn't work. Now, he was in New York when he did it, but there has been some level of support for him in Western New York. So he's in New York City when he did that, but there has been some support for him in Western New York, things like that. If you actually have time, there's a video on the Washington Post which says if each of the five candidates were one of the boroughs, which one would it be? Hillary got Manhattan, of course Bernie got Brooklyn, and I believe Cruz got Queens.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the thing about the Cruz play in New York, Western New York, you know, for people that don't live in New York, haven't been there, you think about New York as being all New York City in the same way that, you know, being originally from California, people think, you know, California is basically the strip along the beach. Western New York, upstate New York, much, you know, more conservative. And, you know, the play in parts of New York City with the challah bread was looking for the conservative, more orthodox Jewish vote. Cruz has been, you know, very, very pro-Israel and trying to be the most pro-Israel person, you know, really in the race. And so there is a play for Cruz in New York. But as we saw in those poll numbers, it's really not getting them anywhere, and it really does look like New York is Trump's to lose. And really the question is, as we go back to what we were talking about in the first segment to some degree, how big can Trump win in New York in terms of the delegate count? Right now, a lot of this, as we've talked about before, is about hunting for delegates, which is why Cruz's win in Colorado got a bit of criticism. They were really focused on playing within the rules of the system, but playing very hard to maximize their delegate count. That's worked for Cruz in these smaller states, but New York is going to be a rough ride. And as we said in the last podcast, as we go through these mid-Atlantic states, places like Pennsylvania, those are going to be rough states for Cruz, where they're going to try to run up the delegate count in the rural and non-urban areas, but it's going to be a tough it's going to be a tough ride for them.
Yeah, and the pandering didn't stop on just on the Republican side. You also see it in the Democratic side. So we have a real quick video I want to show you about Hillary Clinton and her attempt to win over New Yorkers.
2016, the outer boroughs, now at the center of the presidential race. Three of the candidates visited parts of the city today, but were they trying to sample our way of life or just simply pandering? CBS 2's Tony Aiello breaks down the appearances.
I love New York, and I just am thrilled to have the time to spend here.
She's no doubt sincere, but she'd no doubt prefer to have things wrapped up by now. Instead, Hillary Clinton needs to win big in her adopted home state.
I'm going to trust the voters of New York who know me and have voted for me three times.
She took a subway ride in the Bronx, perhaps to chide Bernie Sanders, who told the Daily News he thought riders still used tokens. But when Clinton went to swipe her Metro card, she had to swipe again and again and again. It happens, but seemed like an awkward moment that may cost her some street cred.
That's right, street cred.
Yeah, that's very hip. Now, I mean, one thing to notice about that is that's a local New York City newscast. It's a CBS affiliate from New York. So there's all, you know, there is this kind of mixed dynamic where New Yorkers go, oh, they're pandering. Give me some more of that pandering.
Yeah.
I mean, they complain about it, but you know, they expect it. If you don't pander, then, you know, you get hosed.
Yeah, but also in terms of street cred, so against Bernie Sanders, so they're still using tokens, which means Bernie Sanders hasn't been on the subway in a long time. But also, what's important to note is that while everybody's fighting tooth and nail to get a ticket to see Hamilton, Bernie Sanders, the man of the people, was able to take his wife to see it. It's interesting that people haven't attacked him for going out to see a Broadway show that everybody's going out for when he talks about the special privileges of the rich.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably something a little aspirational there since the Hamilton play on Broadway is such a hard ticket.
Yeah.
You know.
But if we look at the numbers, we see Clinton is in the lead. You know, Sanders, you know, about 40%. But again, it's important to note that this is a very important state, that Hillary Clinton should be able to wrap this up soon, but it's going to drag out for a long period of time. And one of the things that happens is when you drag a campaign out, basically everything gets drudged up. And what's going on right now is Hillary Clinton is getting, and the Clinton campaign have made a few missteps in regards to dealing with issues related to African Americans.
Yeah, we've talked a lot in here about how one of the big advantages that the Clinton campaign has had is that Bernie Sanders has not done well with important constituencies in the Democratic Party, particularly blacks and Latinos. And yet the Clinton campaign really dredged up some bad blood between the Clintons and African-American voters that goes back really to Bill Clinton's presidency to some degree, not to mention the Obama campaign. So let's roll some sound and then we'll work on that.
This is what's the matter. I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped up on crack and sent them out onto the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. She didn't. She didn't. You are defending the people who kill the lives you say matter. Tell the truth. You are defending the people who caused young people to go out and take guns. There was a 13-year-old girl in Washington, D.C. who was planning her own photo. How would you do it? Now, look at this other one. Look at this. That's not true.
Ouch. Tell the truth. All right. So Bill got a little bit of Southern preacher in him, but this is all in response to the 1984 crime bill, which many people are linking to mass incarceration, specifically of African Americans. And this has been one of the major issues. And you know, Bill Clinton first issued a half apology, then issued a full apology in terms of his response. And the problem he's having here is that the rhetoric he was using really goes back to the rhetoric that was used 20 years ago. And Hillary Clinton was in trouble for when people brought up the rhetoric that she used. So in 1996, she made the statement, when talking about the crime bill, the need for the crime bill, they are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators. So she's talking about children in this case. So no conscience, no empathy. We can talk about how they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heel. And so the bring them to heel part, the super predators and the bring them to heel part is where people really got upset. because the idea here is we have these children, and it's by calling them super predators, you're justifying very harsh tactics in terms of dealing with them, then bring them to heel, almost treats them as if they're animals. And so because of this, now Hillary Clinton has apologized. I should not have used that language. But the problem is when she thought she got over that, Bill Clinton comes in and basically uses the same language again of like, you know, there are these extremely violent people in your communities, things of that nature. Further, as a way to defend it, he said, you know, your black leaders, which, oh, yeah, all you had to say was you people, and, oh, it would have been so much better. Not really. But, you know, at least he didn't say you people. I guess that's the good thing. Is that your black leaders supported this. But, however, there's been a lot of talk about this. Like, yes, there were black leaders in support of, many black leaders did support harsher sentencing. But in addition to that, they wanted jobs programs, they wanted reinvestment in these communities in order to have employment and things of that nature. The problem is, they got the harsh punishment, not the other part. And when Bill Clinton and others say, well, you supported this, like, no, we supported part of this. There's another part that we wanted that you didn't hear about. And so there's a piece in the New York Times today which talks about selective hearing on the part of the Clinton administration when it comes to this. And so one of the big pushes here is like, yes, we wanted you to do something about the crime, but then we wanted you to do something to make sure to alleviate these communities, things of that nature, specifically jobs. And as research has shown, when jobs go away, crime goes up. When jobs come in, crime goes down. And so this has been really one of the big problems they've had. So even after this, Bill Clinton apologized, they found another way to step into it. And so we'll run this clip real quick.
Sorry, Hillary. I was running on CP time.
That's not, I don't like jokes like that, Bill. That's not funny.
Cautious politician time.
All right, so as you see, as you hear, this is a basic going back, a skit between Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City and Hillary Clinton. He was apologizing for showing late, says I'm on CP time, also referred to as colored people time, which is used as a reference for why people of color are not on time or somewhat unprofessional. And the member of the Hamilton cast who was black said, no, wait a sec, what are you talking about? I'm offended by that. Hillary Clinton says cautious politician time. Be truthful, it's just a bad joke. At the end of the day, it's a bad joke. Everyone's like, oh, this is racist, this is racially tinged. It was basically a way to make a joke about, to make a joke, and it just didn't go well.
Try to, you know, it's a failed attempt to be cool, and, you know, Bill de Blasio is not gonna have, you know, any future, I think, on stage. You know, his comic timing was pretty off. I think to get away with that was gonna have to be really perfectly delivered to even have a chance at it, and didn't work out that way. You know, as we're talking about this and the Clintons, you know, kind of problems, recurring problems in how they deal with the African-American sort of block of voters in the Democratic Party, I'm wondering, how much do you think Bill Clinton thought about and strategized that? Because for people that have watched political history and remember the Clinton campaign in the 90s, there was immediate speculation by some people that like he knew exactly what he was doing and that it was like a Sister Souljah moment all over again. And for people that don't know about that, the Sister Souljah movement, you know, she's a rapper that made some inflammatory comments about shooting the police, shooting cops, I think, in the early 90s at a political event for Bill Clinton, and he immediately repudiated the comment, and it was widely seen in the context of Bill Clinton being a centrist Democrat, taking the opportunity to say in public that he wasn't overly beholden to black activists and to the black interest groups in the Democratic Party. I don't think it was quite that strategic this time, but I don't know, what do you think?
No, I think, so the Sister Souljah moment was interesting because he went out and openly attacked her. And again, her comments were on the heels of the LA riots. So it's important to put that in context. So the idea of police brutality was important, you know, again, 24 years ago as it is today. Today, I think he saw it as an attack on his legacy. I think what happened more recently, like, you know, when they're attacking her, they're attacking him and attacking his legacy. But then there's also, as a lot of people have stated, if there's any guy who has to show publicly that he's behind his wife, it's Bill Clinton. So if there's any guy out there who owes his wife a lot, it's Bill Clinton. So they were attacking his legacy, but then he may have been overzealous in protecting his wife.
All right, so elsewhere in the political system, it's been a little while since we checked in on the Supreme Court vacancy. Mm-hmm. We talked a bit about Judge Scalia passing. We talked about briefly, I think we at least mentioned that there was a lot of political to and fro about the constitutionality and the politics, the constitutional rules, and whether President Obama should make an appointment or, you know, sort of make a nomination. He nominated Merrick Garland, a, you know, well-known, well-respected, moderate judge. I think we talked about how some senators had, you know, said in the past that they really supported him, but now they don't. But, and then now they don't, they want to wait on this. The politics of that have kind of taken another turn.
Yeah, it's gotten really, because we actually had a few Republicans saying, no, we should have the nomination. Then they pulled back. And so it's looking like nothing may actually happen. Now, the public is in support of going through with the nomination, but I think it's like 60-40, something like that. However, it looks like nothing's going to be done. And this could be problematic for the GOP in the general election. It's not really clear. Could also be problematic for the senators in their elections, in the sense that people like, you know, you're a living problem, part of the problem with Washington. You've seen Justice Roberts critique this behavior, and so you have this this interesting thing where clearly they want to wait because, like, look, if we get our guy in, okay, we're good. But the fear is that if they don't, that, you know, Garland would have been the best it would have gotten.
Right. So the political play right now seems to be in the Senate that they're going to wait. So you do have some Republicans actually very quietly having meetings with Garland. The White House is proceeding in a way that suggests that it's just going to happen. But what seems to be going on is that the Senate is going to wait. They're going to see if who wins the election. If Hillary Clinton wins on the assumption that she would appoint somebody much more liberal and much more to the left than Garland, based on that, if it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, which is less likely, but I think the operative assumption is it'll be Hillary Clinton, that she would appoint somebody not only more liberal, but also younger. And so this person, you know, Garland is, I believe, in his mid-60s or early to mid-60s. And so just, you know, it's insensitive, but to be indelicate, you know, he can only be on the court so long, in all possibility, where Hillary Clinton could do, you know, something like what Ronald Reagan did with Antonin Scalia, who was in his 40s, I think, when he was appointed to the court. He sat on there for a long time. So the play seems to be freeze it in place, see what happens in the election. If the Democrats win, then Garland will probably get a hearing.
Yeah. So it's all a bit of a politics game, and people just don't like this, how overtly political this is playing out. But this is one big issue. It's kind of something that's going to be simmering for a while and will factor into the senatorial races as well as the presidential election. But another issue we want to talk about is something that's kind of been brewing for a while in regards to women's rights issues. And so we have a video to highlight that.
Five women filed a class action lawsuit against a New York state law that creates a so-called tampon tax. The lawsuit filed on March 3rd protests against a tax exemption that protects products such as Rogaine, adult diapers, and dandruff shampoo, but not tampons and sanitary napkins. In New York, items that are considered medical products, such as Rogaine and lip balm, are exempt from sales tax, but feminine hygiene products are not. One of the plaintiffs, Margot Siebert, said, quote, menstruation products are essential, and it is time to acknowledge that access shouldn't depend on who can afford them. Campaigns in several other states have been launched to fight against taxes that affect personal hygiene products differently for men and women. President Obama weighed in on the issue, saying, quote, I have no idea why states will tax these as luxury items. I suspect it's because men were making the laws when those taxes were passed.
All right, so here's a big thing now. That's been brewing to a large degree, with the idea that Rogaine is not taxed and not treated as a luxury item, which seems somewhat problematic. Look, considering I'm a person with very little hair left and would benefit from Rogaine, I understand that is a luxury. whereas feminine hygiene products are a necessity. And so this has become a really big issue regardless. And you see that a lot of states do this. And so this has really been a big push to move this over. So you see Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Maryland don't have a tax for that, but again, the majority of states do tax this, so this has become a very big issue in really talking about women's rights and the fact that women have to pay a tax for something that isn't necessary for them to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those issues that gives you a kind of dramatic look at something that's kind of mundane. That, you know, in the details of the tax code, in the very granular details of government policy, you see political values and political positions invested in this. And my suspicion is this is not going to go away. It's going to be something that we're going to hear a lot more about going forward.
Yeah, you're actually seeing some protests on college campuses. Specifically, the argument is if you're giving away condoms for free, you should also be giving away feminine hygiene products. So the calls are made to put feminine hygiene products in bathrooms. And multiple universities have moved in that direction with the idea being this is fairness. This is a necessity for women, and so you should help in that regard. And I think the fact that Rogaine is not taxed might be a sign of, again, of a gender bias in the creation of laws. And again, as we're talking about gender equality, not just equal pay, but also equal amounts in terms of spending, this is something that's going to really come up to talk about, the fact that women are overtaxed compared to men. There's already been something shown that women's product can be the same thing as a men's product, something like razors. All you do is you paint it pink and you charge a dollar more. And so the argument there is that this clearly is unfair. But this is one of the things that's important. We're talking about civil rights and the equality under the law that women are pointing out that, look, this is not an issue of equality. And again, as women start pushing for more equality, a lot of issues that many people would not even think about are coming forward. So we're seeing the push on diapers for being covered under welfare, things like that. We're seeing more and more of the issues that women face being pushed to the forefront, which is a sign of movement towards equality and the need to further advance equality.
I would say two things. One, seems like a fair idea. Two, I don't think you ought to go to Rogaine. I like the look.
Thank you. I want to thank my barber for it.
Freshly cut.
That's right. Shout out to Ronnie Jackson on Airport and Manor. Got me looking good, Ronnie. But that's all we have for today. We hope you all have a good week.
So long.
The Government 310 in the News podcast is hosted by Drs. Jim Henson and Eric McDaniel and is produced by the Liberal Arts ITS Development Studio and the Department of Government and the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin.